It's human nature not to want to think too much about death, and certainly not your own. Our next guest not only thinks about and deals with death all the time, she's then entrusted with summing up a person's life and legacy in an obituary. Heather Lendy has written for national news outlets, including NPR. She's a columnist for the Alaska Dispatch News. She's also written, though, for the New York Times, National Geographic Traveler, among others. She's a wonderful writer, and her latest book is Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. And I'm going to say right up front, I probably read in the course of a year for this show maybe 80 to 100 books. So some are nonfiction and some are fiction. And to my mind, this is the best nonfiction book that I've read this year. And I'm really highly recommending it. And so it's just wonderful to have her with us by phone all the way from Haines, Alaska, I'll bet, to talk with us about her book. It's great to have you with us, Heather Lendy. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
I really, really, really enjoyed your book.
Thanks.
I tell you what, I'm a professor here at the University of Wisconsin and have taught news writing classes I taught for many years news writing, among other things. But as part of the news writing class, I've always had a week on obituaries, or at least a couple of class sessions. And so I would have students writing obituaries, but I would also have them looking through the obits in their home newspapers and find one that was that came closest to representing what they thought was an excellent obituary, and then we'd kind of share those in classes, and then they'd have to write obituaries. Sometimes I'd make them write their own. And a student came in once with an obit from his hometown weekly, and which it was written by the family members, and I'm sure the local editor hadn't read it. Because there was nothing that was left out of this man's life. And I tried to find it. I kept it for years and years, and I just couldn't locate it. But among other things, and they wrote it in the style of a quote-unquote typical obituary. He met his future wife, who insisted he join the Catholic Church. He took lessons, joined the church, got married, and then he never went back. And 4 years later, after his marriage, he was jailed for trying to kill the family. And he spent 5 years in jail. He was divorced by his wife. He drank too much and lost a foot in a boating accident and nearly froze to death one harsh winter. And on it went. And so I had that in mind when I saw a little blurb on your book. And I thought, I wonder what the book is like. And it's kind of, it's about being an obituary writer, but it's so much more. And I when I finished, I wanted to immediately jump in a plane and fly up to Haines, Alaska to meet you and the folks who live in the community.
Well, thank you. I don't know, you might not want to do that today. It's a little windy.
Well, how did you come to live in Alaska first?
I married a man who wanted to go to Alaska. He studied forestry in college, and we got married in 1982 and bought a pickup truck and drove across the country and ended up in Alaska. We were up in the Anchorage area for about a year, and then he got a job with a sawmill that's now defunct in Haines. And so we've been here now for 31 years.
Yeah. And how did you become an obituary writer?
By accident. Nobody else wanted to do it. So a friend of mine, her mom was dying, and she didn't really like a new reporter for the newspaper that was sort of an investigative reporter type. Every now and then that happens. And so she requested that someone else do her obituary, and everybody else was busy. And I used to write the duly noted column in the paper where you kind of bold-faced people's names who, you know, travel to Milwaukee for a Brewers game and, you know, met the family there or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they figured if I wrote about live people, I could write about dead people. And I've been doing that pretty much ever since. So that was in 1996.
And your book is, well, it's a little about the it's some about the process of writing, but it's about the people and your life.
Yeah, I don't. I guess I don't think that it was interesting in writing the book because I don't think there's anything in it that anybody who you know attends funerals or knows people who die that they admired wouldn't know as sort of universal truths. You know, pretty good is better than perfect, or draw lines in the sand so you can move them, or you know, give a forwarding address, that type of thing. But it's just I get reminded of it more often than most people, and I'm around. I get to write about people who are pretty inspiring to me, anyway. Wow. And I think they would be to anybody.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And you know that talk about the title of your book. It's Find the Good. And your opening chapter discusses that.
Well, this book was kind of hard to write because I was asked to write this essay for a journal on you know last words, you know, wise last words or good lives and you know that's hard, right? I don't know, and so I was on a deadline, and the woman who was the editor kept saying, "Heather, come on, you know, 250 words. Give us two." And then she finally said, "Just three. Give us three words." And so I thought, you know, if I was on my deathbed and I'd said goodbye to all the people I love, and you know, children and grandchildren and great grandchildren I don't even know yet, you know, what advice would I give them? I mean, I'm the kind of person that could have a long, long list of things. And instead, I thought, well, three words: find the good. And I figured if you could find the good in everything, you know, people, situations, your own life, or whatever, if you could look at the world on the brighter side, that would be enough. I mean, everything else ought to fall into place.
Yeah. And I liked, was it in that first chapter when you say we're all writing our own obituary?
We are.
Yeah, every day.
You know? Yeah, I mean, people ask me that. They always say, "Oh, you know, have you written your obituary?" And I'm like, "No, it's just something in the newspaper." I mean, basically, what they really mean is, "How are you living your life?" You know, and that's kind of it. And the people that I've written about who lead the most successful lives are the ones who, you know, leave behind people that love them and relationships that mattered more than anything. And it seems like a lot of the stuff that we do all the time, when it gets sifted through, isn't really the stuff of what our lives are made of.
Yeah, yeah. We're Heather Lendy, our guest today, is the author of Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. It's a wonderful book. I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Have you ever read an obituary that really sums up all the wonderful qualities about somebody you know, or what would you want your obituary to say? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post your questions or your comments there. I have an interesting Facebook comment from Bob, who said, this may be off the subject, and really not, but he said, "But before our dad died 4 years ago, he said he didn't want a funeral. When he did die unexpectedly, there was a lot to do, so we went with his wishes and just had him cremated, not even an obituary. Now I wish we had done it differently. Is it too late to write and post an obituary? He was from Madison, lived out west for the last 30 years of his life, but some people here would be happy to know about him, I'm sure." So, 4 years after his death, what do you think?
I think sure. I mean, especially, imagine in the Madison paper, you pay for your obit anyway, right?
Yep.
And so, I think if you wanted to, you could just say that. You know, we wished we'd done it. And in that way, even that obituary becomes sort of a lesson to other families who may not want to make that choice, who may say, gee, I know Dad says he doesn't want one, but look, here's yeah. someone that says we should have done that. You know, and ultimately, that's always a tricky thing because people make last wishes and stuff, but the ones that they matter to the most are still here, and they're not, and so maybe you should just do what comforts you on some level.
Good points. Ben in New York, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, I'm really enjoying the author today, and I just wanted to say my dad, and he does all of these like life movies. So when people, before they pass away, maybe after they retire, he'll family members will send in home videos, and he'll put them into like, you know, three or four songs, and everyone, you know, cries and laughs and smiles. And my grandpa, when he passed away, there was one at the very end of the movie that my grandpa, it kind of, he had this quote that resembled the, you know, find the good. And so it was, as you go through life, be sure to always focus on the donut and not the hole.
Oh, I love that. And thanks so much for sharing that, Ben. And Heather, you tend to try and find that one nugget as well in your, although you don't shy away from the negative.
I guess. I mean, I tend to. I do sort of walk on the sunny side of the street, and my editor at the Chilkat Family News, Tom Morford, he's kind of the opposite. So he's always reminding me to, you know, to look for the darker moments or the harder moments in a person's life. And his other, this is kind of another good advice for anybody writing their own family member's obituary or any writing in general, is his line is always, you know, prove it. Somebody says, like, oh, they give you the shirt off their back, which never really happens as far as I can tell. But if indeed that is the case, then prove it. You know, say, what color was the shirt? When did he do it? Was it, like, on the dance floor late at night because he was hot? Or was it, you know, at a picnic? You know, get the image of it.
Heather Lendy, our guest today, and she's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today to talk about her book. It's called Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. It's a wonderful book, and we'll talk with her some more right after this look at the news. You stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you think of different kinds of writing, you may think about novels or nonfiction or mysteries or maybe fantasy or science fiction. One form of prose that has quite an important role to play in our lives is the obituary. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have with me Heather Lendy, who has written for national news outlets, including NPR. She has also a columnist for the Alaskan Dispatch News. She writes obituaries for the Chilkat Valley News, and her most recent book is Find the Good, Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer. Heather, again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate the fact you're taking the time to do this. You and each, maybe you should describe your book for our listeners. Each, it's not a collection of obituaries.
No,
by any means.
It's more like things I learned, you know, writing obituaries that kind of, you know, transcend that particular story, or people who inspired me, or you know, just. And the process, I think, of maybe kind of becoming a hopefully a better human being through you know, writing obituaries and being around people when they're at their pretty much most vulnerable and trying to in a way comfort them. So it's kind of a double thing. I mean, I write obituaries, but at the same time, a lot of what I do is. Just listening and talking to people, and probably 90% doesn't end up in a 500 or 600 word piece in the paper.
Yeah, you often meet with family, the family of the deceased, to write your obituary, and I can't imagine that's common in the trade.
I don't know. I mean, in Haines it is, only because it's not my choice. I mean, the credit for this particular form of writing goes to the newspaper and pretty much my editor, Tom, and the ones before that, Bonnie, and even Ray Menaker, everybody around here sort of believe that when someone dies, it's news. So we have this kind of hybrid of a typical obituary with all the, you know, names and dates and survive-bys, and then like a feature story about the person or a short profile where you interview people in town and write about it. And instead of having the family pay for it, the paper pays me $75. So it's a whole different way to do it. I suppose it makes everybody a little bit like a celebrity or feel important because their life is looked into a little bit differently than if you just wrote it down yourself.
And so you learn, and it's one of, you learn a lot about the community. I don't know if you've read any of Michael Perry's books, but
I have. I'm a big fan. I especially like Population 405.
Yeah, 485. Yeah, and
485, is that what it is? Yeah.
Your book reminded me so much of that. I sent him a note and said that he should pick up a copy of your book.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like his stories, and he was an EMT. That's a hard book, and it is similar to being in a small town and how all these, you know, relationships and things that happen were all connected, publicly and privately.
You even tell stories of meeting, and by the way, each chapter is a story unto itself. So, just for the reader, the potential reader, you even tell stories of meeting with the person when they knew they were going to die and wanted to participate in the writing of the obituary and wanted you to do it. Renee, I think, was one.
Yeah, Renee Pizel Walker. That's the only one I've done like that. And it was, I mean, what are you going to do when someone who's, you know, your contemporary comes up to you and says that they, you know, their expiration date is up? And I knew she had been living with breast cancer for a lot of years, but she looked healthy, and I thought she was doing okay, and she's been teaching school. And anyway, and she asked if that was something she didn't want her family to have to do after she died. And so I met with her, and we just, you know, she gave me all the details of, you know, where she went to high school and college and, you know, the dates of her wedding and her kids' birthdays and their middle names and, you know, things that in a normal conversation are kind of bland, but then when you're talking to somebody who's saying this to be in their own obituary, it's just like heartbreaking. I got all that from her, but I didn't write the obituary ahead of time, and I didn't ever, you know, share anything that I was going to write with her because I felt like I'd jinx her if I wrote it too soon.
Yeah.
And she lived another almost 2 years, a year and a half, a year and three quarters after we had met and gotten the details done. And then when I actually wrote that one, I did it in, I had her write it. I just quoted her a lot of the way through it, you know, and things like she said, you know, don't ever say I don't complain. I complain all the time. She said, and I think about this now when I write other cancer deaths or things like that. She said, don't say I died after a long battle with cancer or struggle with cancer. She said, it's not a battle. I live with it. It's my life. And I think about that when we tend to use that language without thinking. Yeah. It's like it's not hopefully a struggle to live. Maybe it is, but then make sure that that's accurate.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And most of your stories focus on a human individual, but I have to tell you, I just again this morning reread the chapter about your cat named Betty, and I have tears in my eyes at the end, but it's a nice kind of tear.
I guess
I mean?
I hope so. I mean, I don't mean to make people sad. I like to think laugh sometimes through these stories. But yeah, that was a cat that, you know, I didn't want to have this cat, and I'm not a real cat person. And in fact, I'm allergic to them. I'm a dog. There's dogs all over the place at my house. But this was a cat that was born in my kid's bedroom. It belonged to the babysitter, and she was not quite right. It was the last kitten to come out and lost some oxygen or something, and so was never all there, but who turned out to just be a delightful companion, really, to for my family and our children, and she lived to be like 17 years old. And so it was, and she even died nicely. She just died in front of the wood stove. I mean, she was never a bother. And I was thinking about that cat and how she was just a good illustration of something that I try to remember all the time, is to, you know, that line from, there was Gene Webster's book, Daddy Long Legs, about take the kind of happiness that comes your way. And I think, you know, that cat illustrated it for me, and it might seem silly, but it isn't really. The people that, and the pets, I guess, that we share our lives with, they're kind of important. And I learned something from that cat. And it was even, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who has a, she's my age, you know, it's like 56, and she's got a boyfriend that's 75, and she was concerned about that, and that, you know, what's she going to do, because he's just going to die before she does, and it's crazy to have all this. And I was like, you know, I don't want to sound like a big, you know, like I'm quoting myself here, but geez, if you're happy, take it. I mean, you know how long it'll last. I just can't overthink this stuff.
Well, and you know, in that particular chapter, you have so many wonderful little lines and phrases in each chapter. But I think in that chapter, he said, "Isn't it always the ones who don't ask for your time and attention who receive it more willingly than those who clamor for it?" And I thought, "Isn't that the truth?" This kitty never really clamored for attention at all.
No, it wasn't the kind of cat that would jump in your lap or rub your legs or meow or anything. You had to
remind her to eat.
To remind her to eat. Yeah, there's not a lot of cats that you have to shake and say, "Please come and eat," and then she wouldn't remember if she had or hadn't. But I think that's true, and I think I don't know how. I mean, I guess I don't. I think most people know that, don't they?
I don't know. I hadn't thought about it until I read it.
Oh, well, maybe that's what I always think. I think that the things that I share in these, you know, stories or the books that I write are really, I'm like passing them through. Someone else is telling me, and I'm, you know, I see it, and I'm like, gosh, look at that. I'll tell you what I learned today or what I saw today or what I heard that is really wisdom from, I mean, that one is sort of just from the cat, I guess.
Well, and the last sentence in that, see, there's where I'm sitting there with some tears in my eyes, and then the last sentence puts a big smile on my face. The last sentence in that story.
I don't even remember what it was. What did I say? Something smart, I hope.
It was really very cool, and let me just make sure I read it. I do it correctly. Your last sentence was, which is a roundabout way of saying, I'll read the world is full of happiness and plenty to go around if you're only willing to take the kind that comes your way. And then the last sentence is, which is a roundabout way of saying that if someone else's cat has kittens in your closet, keep the runt. And that put such a nice smile on my face. And I thought, oh, this woman is a wonderful writer.
Oh, thank you.
Nancy in Grafton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Just recently there was an obituary in the Milwaukee paper. A woman wrote her own obituary. I thought that was pretty doggone nice. And, you know, there was when you go to a funeral, I already told my kids, don't you ever have Amazing Grace, How Great Thou Art, or any of those songs that they play all the time, because I just think funeral music out of a funeral service, it should be for that person, their kind of life. And one time I was a caregiver for a fellow, and he had a young guy take him down to the ponies down in Illinois. And it didn't take him any time at all to get down to the racetrack, you know. But coming back, I guess it took forever, because they went the back way, and I guess they stopped at all the taverns. So at the funeral, which was it wasn't in a church, it was in a cemetery area. Anyhow, I was asked to sing. And so I, all the people were walking up to take one last look at the man, you know. And I said, don't be shocked. Please join in. And I started out, there is a tavern in the town, in the town. And, oh, my gosh, the people, the smiles on their faces. And to this day, his wife has said people have always remembered that song because for that man, because that was his life. And that was, you know, it wasn't that he was just always drinking or anything. He's a very wealthy man. But that was his hobby, you know.
That's a great story, Nancy. Thank you. You write about there's one chapter where you're writing about going to a funeral, and this is not quite the same, but going to, you know, some you say it's something you should do. And you write about, don't avoid going to the funeral.
Right. There was that. Well, and there's two things. I was just thinking, like, her songs. I was thinking about a funeral that Clyde Bell, who was a longtime resident of our town, and he was kind of, a person that was around all the time and kind of a character, and everybody knew him. And at his funeral, they played his favorite song, which was Ry Cooder's Mexican Divorce, which was, and everybody, that was what he would have wanted them to play. He said, it was kind of, you know, wildly inappropriate, but perfectly Clyde. And the one I think you're talking about is the story about there are times when writing obituaries, especially now that I'm writing them for people that I've known my whole life, that are my peers a lot of times, or their children, which is the worst. It can be hard on your heart, you know, and you think, well, I can't do this anymore. And then I think I'm never going to any more funerals because I just can't stand it. And I went to one that was, you know, a celebration of a life of a woman that was about my same age and had brain cancer and died. And, I was like, I wrote about that in the book about how, and I think sort of my reluctance to be there and how I didn't really think there was much to celebrate. And then kind of realizing that actually it's good to go to these things and to share that and to remember a good life and kind of know we're all in this together. And so I think I will keep going to them. But it's, there is that tendency to just say, oh, forget it. I can't go to one of these. And then you think, but it's part of it. I mean, everybody is born and everybody dies, and it's being together is kind of the nice thing after that happens.
We had an email from Jeff who says, I think it should be necessary to somehow say how a person dies in an obituary. It bothers me when I read an obituary and I have no idea why this person died when I'm finished reading the. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I mean, I agree, and that's a newspaper policy that we have, and in fact, it's changed slightly over the last couple of years, but basically nobody in Haines dies of natural causes. It has to be why, and, you know, heart failure, the type of cancer, whatever it was. And my editor and I sometimes get in arguments because he says there's no such thing as dying of old age. And I'll say, Tom, she's 99. She hadn't been to the doctor in 30 years. She died in bed, you know, after picking berries all day. I think that's old age. And he's like, I don't know. It's got to be something. And then what happened was there was a man who was in his late 90s that died, and I said old age. And then he said, no, you got to go back to the family and find out exactly what the cause of death was. And he had a bunch of sons who were big guys and in the construction industry, and they came in and told Tom that old age was good enough, and that one got to say old age. so sometimes we can, but yes, the Chilkat Valley News does actually always have a cause of death, and I agree. I think, and the reason behind that isn't so much, to be curious, but because it takes away, as the listener said, from reading the story, if you're trying to figure out why is this person 28 and how did they die unexpectedly? What does that mean?
Yeah.
What happened? or 50 or 100 even. What you know, you read this thing and it raises more questions, and then it takes away from the story of their life if people are trying to figure it out. There are times, like
suicide?
Someone died of, you know, like alcohol. We have that sometimes. It will put the cause of death at the end so that it doesn't detract from all the things they did in their life if they kind of went over the edge at the end and had this very sort of tragic decline. You know, you don't want the story of anybody's life to be their death.
And suicide?
Suicide is a really, that one, at least in Haynes, really tends to depend on, you know, how and when in the family. What the paper will do is if it's something public, like, for instance, it was a search for someone missing, and this happened, and then the person was found, you know, with a self-inflicted gunshot wound, you know, mm-hmm. dead in the snow or whatever. Then because it had been this public search, that becomes a story in the paper. And then the obituary, we run it the same week and have the story of their life. If it's something private, you know, it's a little trickier. It's kind of, it's up to the family how they want to do it. There was one recently where the mother, you know, spoke quite frankly about, you know, they don't know what happened. They hadn't seen the signs coming when her son took his life. There's one I'm actually doing this week. I'm not sure how it's going to pan out. I don't know whether they want to say or not. I wish I had an answer to that, but I tend to fall on the side of compassion. And in a small town, people know anyway.
Yeah. I think a lot of people prepare, or when they're thinking about death, wonder if they've really done much or really left a mark. What does your experience tell you about that?
My experience, if that's what it is, I guess it is at this point, is that it's what matters is relationships, I think, more than the stuff that you've done. I mean, people can, quote-unquote, get a lot accomplished, but sometimes those are the people who, when you start talking to their family and everything, it seems like there's the most regrets and the most loose ends with people who are super highly accomplished and very busy at their work or their whatever it is that they do really well, that they tend to shut out people that care about them. And I think obviously there's a balance. You don't want to just do nothing all day, but it's the people who, at least the ones that I admire, I guess, are the ones who, you know, will stop and talk to you, will stop and say hello. And unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't happen unless you've had like a brush with death or you've experienced a kind of a change in your own life, because, you know, we're all being told all the time to work hard and do well and, you know, be busy.
Well, as they, you know, as we've all heard many, many times, you'll never hear anybody on their deathbed saying, "I wish I'd spent more time in the office."
No, but you know, I think sometimes for creative people, you might hear people say, "I wish I'd spent more time climbing another mountain," or "I wish I'd spent more time painting another picture or writing another book." And so it's, you know, it's kind of a value judgment. You're still pulling yourself away from the people that are important to you.
Well, I don't want this to sound like this is a downer book at all, because this is a fun book about a wonderful story about community and about life, and certainly about death as well. And it's very well written. And I said in the beginning, and I will just repeat it, it's my favorite nonfiction book of the year. I've really enjoyed it very much. And in fact, I immediately went out and ordered a copy of your first book. That's coming. It hasn't arrived yet. But Heather, it's been a real pleasure. When your next book comes out, I'm going to look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Larry.
Heather Lendy has written Find the Good. That's the title of the book. Unexpected Life Lessons from a Small Town Obituary Writer, and it's a book that I really enjoyed, and I'm pretty sure you will enjoy it too. She's written for National Geographic Traveler, NPR, and the New York Times, among others, and also for her town in Haines, Alaska. Thank you so much for listening. Gosh, it was fun talking with our two authors today, and great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay with us.